Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
The fact is, if you are on work time and you are looking at spicy stuff at work, it doesn't matter whether it's a work device or not.
Is this as serious as like someone getting caught drinking at work?
Yeah, I mean, the fact you're asking the question, do you think it shouldn't be? Because there's the chance that whoever does this investigation is going to come across offensive and inappropriate material. If you're a business that isn't training people on things like anti-discrimination, sexual harassment, and these sorts of topics, you are fighting a losing battle. Don't look at spicy stuff at work.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to HRER. Welcome back to you. You haven't been here for ages, have you?
Just saying, it feels like I've missed months, which I suppose it is. Because I was off poorly for the last lot, so Dawn and Michelle very kindly stepped in.
They did.
So when did we record before that? Was it before Christmas?
It will have been, yeah.
Yeah.
It will have been.
I don't feel like I know what I'm doing anymore. I don't even know how we open these things up.
No. It's a good job. It's steadily informal, isn't it? No, it would have been before. It was before I went away in January, so it would have been before Christmas, yeah. You are literally like 3 months out, yeah.
I feel like a total newbie. Don't know what I'm doing. Let's hope I don't embarrass myself and Heroes brand.
It's all right, mate. I do a good enough job anyway. We've got some, today's is quite like, I don't know the term
to punchy,
use.
I think this one.
Punchy?
Punchy. I think we are punching a bit going for this sort of a topic. One, because it might get blacklisted by every platform that we go on because of the topic of what we're talking about. We're going to have to use quite careful words, I think, so
we don't
get algorithmed out.
We are. YouTube especially don't like certain words that we're going to use.
Yeah. And I'd say maybe we give this one a health warning. So if you're deeply religious, maybe not
easily offended.
Easily offended, yeah. So we are going to be talking about explicit adult material.
If either of us use the wrong word, we're sorry, YouTube, but we'll do our best.
Yeah,
I'll read the email out first because there's a few like other things we can compare this to in recent news, isn't there, to be fair? But we'll start with the original inquiry. Hi, Alyssa. Needing some urgent help. A member of staff has caught Dave watching adult material in the office while she was present. It's made her feel deeply uncomfortable and it's been reported to me. Dave is refusing any knowledge of this happening, especially on work devices. We need to check our systems, but what do we do in terms of handling this claim? It all sounds a little bit embarrassing.
Embarrassing. It's also potentially quite serious. You know, everyone's got the freedom to do whatever they want to do in their own time, provided it's legal. And explicit adult material. Hopefully everybody knows what we're talking about. Do we use the word once and then refer to it thereafter as explicit adult material, even though it's a bit of a mouthful?
Let's call it corn.
Yeah, so that we...
That's what everyone calls it when they're speaking about it on the internet. They call it corn.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just...
I'll take your word for it.
Just to get honest. Yeah, honest. Yeah.
Okay. YouTube. Watch a lot of content about this sort of thing, do you?
No, not a set, but there seems to be a thing at the minute where like influencers will speak about how it's negatively impacting like relationships stuff. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's come from that.
Okay. That's very insightful of you.
I'm informed.
Okay. So that's what we're talking about, is someone who has been caught watching naughty stuff at work.
There we go.
Like I say, you know, what people want to do in their own time, on their own devices, provided it's legal. We've actually had new rules in the UK around accessing this sort of stuff, which has hit how freely people can access things without signing up and giving their personal details. So, you know, no longer are you an anonymous viewer online. If you're in the UK, you have to give your details and I think a credit card. I don't know.
It's like signing to a website. I think it's first name, last name, email address.
Again, lots of...
I'm chronically online.
Okay.
Right? Don't try pin things on me.
Only because I know your mother listens. So it's how uncomfortable can I make Ollie in one podcast?
Yes. Do your worst.
So yeah, as I was saying, what people do in their own time, as long as it's legal, absolutely fine. If someone is using work devices to access naughty material at work, then that's potentially a very serious disciplinary offence. So that's the starting point. let's dive in, take this one to pieces and see where we go with it.
Far out thing, but you said it's like potentially serious. Is this as serious as like someone getting caught drinking at work?
Yeah, I mean, the fact you're asking the question, do you think it shouldn't be?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say watching naughty material at work.
Depends if you get caught or not.
Sorry. Do I need to like have some monitoring on your on your work laptop?
I'm good, honestly.
No, it is. This is up there pretty serious. One, you're on work time. You shouldn't be watching anything, whether it's the football, whether it's, you know, reading the news or naughty stuff. But also, depending on the type of websites people are going on, you know, there's malware risks and things like that. But also, I mean, I'm going to make a generalization here, and I don't know if I'm maybe going to take
this too far. No, go on, because I do it all the time. You do it.
If people are watching this sort of stuff, normally it's like a personal gratification sort of thing.
Strange way of putting it.
Yeah, that's not the sort of like environment we want to be promoting at work.
It's not a professional
thing to be doing.
No.
And in this instance where someone has allegedly caught somebody else doing this, it's going to make somebody else feel grossly uncomfortable. It's going to bring allegations around things like sexual harassment. And normally this is something that in a disciplinary policy, in a company handbook, would be listed as something that's gross misconduct. So while some people may have a different benchmark with how serious they think this is, I would say most of my clients would pin this as gross misconduct. So yeah, in the same sort of vein as drinking at work.
It's up there.
Yeah.
So first question, what should the person in charge of HR processes be doing in the first few hours after this has been reported?
What I would say is it's the same as any other allegation. We don't necessarily overreact. So we're not going to be, you know, wrestling somebody out of the room, pulling their laptop off them and being like, oh my God, you're disgusting. At this point, it's an allegation that's been reported. So the first thing that we need to be doing is investigating. So person who has reported it, we're going to be taking a witness statement from them and understanding to the extent they're comfortable telling us what they saw. That's going to give us the starting point for where we dive into this in a bit more detail. Is this something that we would suspend somebody for? I mean, potentially. If the allegation is somebody has been doing this, one, on company time, two, using company connections, Wi-Fi systems, and a company device, do we think during that investigation there's a risk of either the investigation being prejudiced or something unfair coming, or repetition of conduct? Do we think that they might wipe their computer? If we think there's a risk that it's going to prejudice that investigation, yes, we might suspend them, but not necessarily immediately. It's a complex one because where it involves sexual material, which this one does, and we've got someone who has made that report and who is saying that they feel grossly uncomfortable, is having these two people working side by side, is that going to potentially present a welfare issue? Or could it actually open the person up who's been accused to further allegations? If that person who has seen this is now going to be very heightened emotionally around this person, are they going to be reading things into behavior that potentially aren't there to someone who's a bit more objective because they've been involved in this situation? So these are all the kinds of things we need to be thinking about before suspension. Because suspension is a neutral act. It's not, you've potentially done something bad, we're going to have
it's
you sit
like
at home.
It's like a pause type thing.
It sort of is. And we've got to justify why we're doing it. Right. So it can't just be a knee-jerk reaction because someone's been accused of something bad. It needs to be, what is the suspension going to achieve? Why do we need this person not to be in the workplace or having access to their systems? Could we move them to another part of the business? Can we restrict access to certain things? The starting point really needs to be, how can we keep somebody here rather than sending them home?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we investigate. Invariably, we're going to be interviewing this person, and we're also going to be wanting to go onto their devices to see what it is that they've been looking
at. Just their
at.
Work devices, though.
So,
are you allowed to look at personal?
That's a really interesting question. It's not without complexity because you use your personal phone.
I do.
At work, for work purposes.
I do.
Yeah. Your contract and our handbook has a monitoring clause, which says that we can look at what people are doing at work. So that would potentially give me access to your personal device if I needed to do an investigation. If this was a personal device, the company doesn't have those sorts of clauses and policies in place, but is expecting somebody to use a personal device at work and hasn't wrapped that up in any sort of paperwork, there could be an access issue.
Right.
And what I would say in those sorts of situations is, this is where HR or managers can sometimes get a bit bogged down in the difficulty of, well, if we can't look on there and see exactly what they've been doing, how are we going to prove this? Mm-hmm. But there's lots of allegations that we will come across day to day where it's he said, she said, or she said, she said, or whatever.
Finger pointing.
Where, yeah, we've got to come to a decision on balance. Do we think this happened or not? We don't always have irrefutable proof that something has happened. So if we have, in like this instance, an allegation where somebody says, I saw this, and that person's denying it, but also they're not going to give us access to a device for us to check ourselves, is there a credibility point there? Which, as HR manager, you're entitled to make a decision on credibility as long as you can justify it. So
it looks guilty, doesn't it, at that stage?
And that's what you'd warn someone is, say, look, if you're not prepared to allow us access to something which could clear your name, then we are potentially going to take a judgment on this based on the fact that we considered that you're being obstructive.
What are you hiding type thing, yeah.
Yeah, the key messaging is we're not going to be making any knee-jerk reactions. We're going to investigate as normal. The fact that it's something a bit spicy compared to maybe what other people might be accused of, we're not going to get overexcited and kind of lose our heads over it. We're going to investigate it in the same way as everything else. The other thing that we need to think about here is if we are going to be going onto devices and doing some monitoring and having a look at what's been looked at, is who is going to do that?
Okay.
Because there's the chance that whoever does this investigation is going to come across offensive and inappropriate material.
Mm-hmm. Would you outsource it?
You could outsource it, potentially.
Third party geese or like come in.
Specialists.
Non-biased.
I'll come and find spicy stuff on
I'm good at looking for this stuff.
I am really starting to worry about
it. It is an experience. Sorry.
So yeah, potentially something you could outsource. But I would say as long as the person who knows what they're going on to look for has got the heads up and they're comfortable doing it, mm-hmm. what I wouldn't be doing is forcing somebody who is going to be grossly uncomfortable into the situation where you're like, that's just the job, love, get on with it.
It's not your regular 10 a.m., is it?
No, it's not. And I remember when I was a trainee lawyer, a bit different to this because it's not spicy stuff. It's I had to spend essentially weeks and months going through documentation that was in a different language, sifting through page by page for hours and hours and hours and hours on end, sending it off to a translator and then coming back and basically page counting and comparing. And so I did that for weeks and months as a paralegal with no break, no job variation.
Just dead.
It became so mind-numbingly whatever that actually it starts to like damage your welfare.
Yeah.
Where you're at the point where if I see another page of, I think it was maybe Japanese, of Japanese text, I'm actually going to go and like, I don't know.
Jump off a building.
Change careers, go and do something else because I cannot cope with another day of this. It's really important where we've got something, one, that somebody knows what they're getting themselves into. Two, how long they're going to be doing it for. Three, what the expectation is around things that they might potentially see. And four, if this is going to go on for a while, that maybe we rotate people in this sort of environment. I used to work in another law firm where they had an excellent childcare department.
Okay.
Where lawyers who were dealing with cases around children who'd been abused, they were running those sorts of cases. And what they would do with the, so this was back in the day when people would be dictating notes and secretaries would type up.
Minutes, like meeting minute type things.
Kind of, yeah. So yeah, if you were a lawyer and you were writing a letter or a report, you had a little machine that you could dictate into.
Oh, okay.
And the secretary would, at the other end, listen.
That's cool.
And they'd type out the minutes for you.
Wow.
I mean, I cannot believe that this is like a wow moment. This was like my entire career for like
wow.
8 years.
You'd have Claude doing that for you now. I want you to have Claude on the
I'd have Claude doing it now. We used to have little tapes. So you had a little recorder and the tape would go to the secretary and she'd listen and type out the report. Anyway, wow. I'm showing my age now a little bit as well.
Back in the olden days.
Back in
it?
The olden days. However, if you think if you've got the same secretary typing minutes of that sort of content, where trauma. They're talking about trauma and abuse yeah. with that involves children again and again and again and again, day in, day out, there's a welfare issue there. So again, yeah. we're rotating people in and out. So even though this is a one-off investigation, what you might find is once you go digging, there's a lot of this stuff.
Mm.
It might be, we don't need to look at everything. We're happy enough, yes, you've done this. But actually, if it's more serious, if it's something potentially we're going to be handing off to the police, particularly where if it's illegal material, is we need to be very, very conscious of the welfare of the person who's going to be doing the actual hands-on investigation stuff here. So mm-hmm. it's a really long-winded way of saying we can't, yes, we don't lose our heads over things like this. We investigate as normal, but don't forget that the people who are actually doing the hands-on stuff with the investigation, we've got an obligation towards their well-being as well.
This is quite a similar thing to a story in the news a few weeks ago, eh? With a... was it British Airways?
Yeah, the British Airways case. So...
criminal. Not literally criminal, but like...
I mean, there was a criminal case.
Was it a criminal case?
It was a criminal case. Oh, yeah, so there was a criminal case and there was an employment case. I mean, this one was fantastic. I mean, it's not because it's ruined, I think, two lives.
Oh, yeah.
But I think every employment lawyer and HR commentator has really, really enjoyed doing the commentary on this one. So the employer was British Airways and they had a staff rest area where essentially they have like little cots or bunks in a room. I think there's curtain dividers. So people between shifts or flights or whatever can go and put their head down before they either go get another flight or whatever. I'm not entirely sure, but it's a room with these cots and bunks. They're not separated by gender. So everyone can...
like a hostel environment.
Kind of, yeah. Everyone go in, put their head down or whatever. So you have female employee who is in one bed and there's a male employee in another. And the allegation that she made was that boy employee, she heard a noise coming from his bed that she said sounded like a loud slapping noise. And when she looked over, she said he was giving himself a treat and looking at her through the curtain. She reported this. Obviously, this is something that is, one, very serious, two, potentially a criminal matter, and, you know, three, potentially gross misconduct. He's actually arrested, I think, after a flight or before a flight.
Right.
From memory, I don't think it was public. I think the passengers either hadn't arrived or had already gone. And there is a full criminal trial, and then the employment case follows. In the criminal trial, he's found not guilty. Mm-hmm. And I'm paraphrasing here because I haven't read the criminal transcript. I've read the employment one, but not the criminal one. The employment one does refer to the criminal one. And basically, the account given by the woman was found not to be credible. There wasn't enough evidence. The case against him fell apart.
Okay.
Despite that, British Airways proceeded to dismiss him. Now, an employer doesn't have to follow what a criminal court does. A criminal court has to conclude that beyond all reasonable doubt, someone is guilty. So if we're thinking about standard of proof, so we've got 50-50 here, beyond all reasonable doubt is like up here. It's a pretty high test to get to. Mm-hmm. Employers don't have to get that high. All we have to do is go, on balance, who do we believe?
Okay.
It's literally 51%. Who do we think is 51% more likely to be true than not? So we haven't got to get as far as a criminal court has to, which means just because a criminal court found one thing doesn't mean that we have to follow that. British Airways decided that the account given by the woman was credible. And from memory, I think because she was upset. So because she was upset about it, they thought that what she said must have been essentially true.
Okay, okay.
Despite the fact that he was able to show that her account just didn't stand up in the criminal court. So where they were criticised by the tribunal in this case was that they hadn't tested the reliability of that evidence enough. Now, it's always difficult in these situations because where you've got someone who's reported something, they're upset, it involves either sexual offence or spicy material or whatever it is. There's sometimes a reservation from an employer about how much they want to interview and push that person because they don't want to upset them further.
It's details you arguably don't really want to know in it as well, like,
is, but where you've got something that is this level of serious, we're potentially ruining another person's life here.
Yes.
You know, so we can't necessarily shy away from pushing on reliability. Yes, we have a duty of care towards the original witness and we need to make sure that's carefully managed. But if we just take their word for it without testing reliability, without going down the test of what we need to do to get to reasonable belief, we're potentially ruining somebody else's life without having gone through due process. So this individual was actually found not guilty by the criminal court and his dismissal was found to be unfair.
He got paid then?
Yeah, he will have got paid. I suspect. So that's a kind of live example of something that's much more serious than the situation that we're talking about here. But it shows how it can go catastrophically wrong if we shy away from talking about the difficult or embarrassing topics. And that might mean that the person who's investigating or the person who is advising on this, we need to make sure that they are the right person as well. Because a subject is embarrassing that we don't want to talk about it, like, for example, when we did the podcast where we talked about periods and you visibly squirm every time I say that word, I do want to watch the menopause one just to see how you get on with that. You know, it's got to be someone who can sit in a room with a straight face and talk about difficult stuff without squirming, without blushing, you know, and hold this in a professional environment. And that isn't everybody. And that's not a criticism, but it is an additional fact that we need to think about, because if you can't ask the difficult questions because it makes you uncomfortable, maybe you're not the right person to run that investigation.
We ain't going to get to the bottom of it.
No.
We're not. To be fair, I've not asked like many actual questions, but we've covered all the HR perspective ones there quite well.
Oh, we did well, have we?
Yeah, yeah. Literally, like, you literally said, well, the last one was, does it fall under gross misconduct? You said at the very start, he was like, yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. Don't look at spicy stuff at work.
No. I mean, why would you? Employee ones, this was on a personal computer, so I don't see the harm.
So the fact is, if you are on work time and you are looking at spicy stuff at work, it doesn't matter whether it's a work device or not. Equally, if you're doing something like this where another employee can see what you're doing, then we're getting into the realms of even more serious behaviour. So when we've talked about sexual harassment, you know, we've gone through this so many times when we've talked about the training. It's not just around conduct that's directed at somebody. So one of the case studies actually that's in the training on our e-learning is where you've got a group of people who are talking in unacceptable terms about somebody. Somebody walks past, hears the conversation, and they are offended, and that's enough for sexual harassment. So the fact that it's unwanted conduct, nobody wants to be seeing this sort of stuff at work. I say nobody, that's a bit of a generalization, but you'd hope nobody wants to see this sort of thing at work. It's unwanted. It's conduct of a sexual nature because of the nature of the content itself. Has it had the purpose or effect of impacting someone's dignity at work or creating a humiliating, offensive environment at work? Yeah, it does. So it ticks all the boxes. So that person who has witnessed this at work is then potentially a victim of sexual harassment. So the fact that it happened on a work device, on a personal device, sorry, doesn't actually make a difference to how serious this could potentially be.
It's still in the environment.
It's still within the environment. And I'd say the other real life example where we've got something sort of similar, where we're talking about things that are offensive. There was a fire service case recently where, and this is one that I've gone into in detail on YouTube, where I've done a bit more of a case deep dive. And you've got a firefighter who, after a shout where they rescued a woman, is talking in crew room afterwards, and he describes the woman as a pig because he doesn't think she's attractive.
Okay.
The person he's talking about isn't there. She doesn't hear him talking about her in these terms, but other people do.
Okay.
And that is enough to bring, for it potentially to be something that would be classed under harassment laws.
Oh.
Now, in that instance, it wasn't a case of sexual harassment. I don't believe. He was dismissed anyway, and it was found to be an unfair dismissal, again, because of process, because of procedure. The fire service made a bit of a mess of it. But we have to remember, it's not just where conduct is directed at somebody and that person gets annoyed, offended, or upset. Yeah. Where we've got passerbys or people who hear conversations, that is where there is a risk as well.
Right, okay. So it's not necessarily the person, the target, who has to be bothered by it.
Exactly.
It can be anybody.
Yeah. And the wider aim, I suppose, there is, one, it's about the general work environment, but also there is sometimes an issue with victims coming forward. And one of the myths, and it's something, again, that we address in the training, is you don't need the consent of the victim to come forward and make a complaint. So if you witness sexual harassment or, you know, any other type of harassment going on in the workplace, you can report it even though you're not the victim. It's not targeted at you. Because if you've overheard it and you have suffered the environment as a result, you are also someone who is technically a victim under the legislation. So you don't need the consent of the victim. Anyone can come forward and report this stuff.
You mentioned training there. We'll close on that if you want, because that's probably the measures you need to take to avoid these kind of things now.
Training isn't a magic pill. I'm going to have Dawn.
You've got to pay attention.
I mean, Dawn's going to be shouting when she hears me say this. Training isn't a magic pill. It's a really great start. If you're a business that isn't training people on things like anti-discrimination, sexual harassment, and these sorts of topics, you are fighting a losing battle if you haven't done the absolute basics. And training really is now considered to be the absolute basics. The law as it currently stands, we have to take reasonable steps in the workplace to prevent sexual harassment. In October this year, that's going to be upgraded, and it's got to be all reasonable steps have to be taken. If you're a business where sexual harassment has occurred in the workplace and you haven't even started with training your staff, you are never going to convince a judge that you have taken all reasonable steps to prevent it in the workplace. So it should be considered mandatory. Without it, you haven't got a hope in hell of defending a sexual harassment claim and convincing a judge that you have taken all reasonable steps to prevent it. However, the training itself isn't enough. One, it needs to be good quality. Two, you need to test that knowledge has actually gone in. You need to account for skill fade. So it's something that should be done every year. But also, if we're not in a culture that is living and breathing the stuff that we are training, we're teaching one thing and doing something else. We need to make sure that our managers and our business leaders are doing that training and also understanding that this is what a positive culture looks like, where we don't tolerate sexual harassment.
Top down perpetuation.
It's got to absolutely be in the fabric of your business. So we need to be doing those risk assessments. We need to be having materials around the business saying that we have a zero tolerance policy to stuff. We need to have reporting lines where someone can report this stuff if it goes wrong. So yes, the training is absolutely crucial, but it becomes worthless if you're not going to do the follow-up stuff. Now, we help our customers. So we give away risk assessments, the materials, you know, our consultancy stuff. We can absolutely help with this. But if you haven't done the training, if you can't even tick that box, why bother turning up to tribunal? I'll just get your checkbook out, frankly.
Pay the judge.
Don't pay the judge. We're not paying the judge.
Oh, that's bribery,
no,
isn't it?
No, that's bribery. We're going to be writing a compensation check to the claimant.
Pay the claimant. Don't pay the judge. That's very illegal.
And when it comes to reporting, you know, we've made that super easy as well, because if you've got the HERO system, we've got the ability for employees to raise grievances within there. It can all be held in a safe place. And it means that employers are absolutely following the steps they need to do when those reports are made, because it's all built into the system.
You can identify themes as well, eh? Yeah. Like if there's like a certain type of grievance or disciplinary coming up from a certain person.
Yeah.
You can nip it in the bud. And it's not all on paper, which a lot of people seem to keep doing nowadays.
Not me with my spreadsheets when I've got HubSpot and all the...
You've got Claude at it, aren't you now?
I do have Claude. Claude's my new favourite thing.
Just as he's hitting the news for doing all the naughty things, Claude. But yeah, I'm told he's great.
I'm not even going to engage in slagging off Claude. I'm not. I'm rising above it.
Anti-Claude propaganda. This is nonsense. Yeah, I think that's it for today. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.